No. So let's do quick review. Many of you, I think, missed first chapter. I think a lot of you skipped. So anyway, so next week I'm going to request Sarivilas Prabhu to give first chapter overview, one class. So I will request him to give. So after that we can have exam. So today we'll try to finish the first chapter. I think we stopped at 41, so we have 5 verses, so we'll finish now. So just do a recap from 39, right?
Yes, 39, 40.
39, 40, 41. We did 3 verses last week. So text 39. I will just read the English translation. With the destruction of dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished. And thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of family become polluted. And from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Varshini, comes unwanted progeny. 41. An increase of unwanted population clearly causes hellish life, both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because the performances of offering them food and water are entirely stopped. So, what reason starts from 31st? So, we know there are 5 reasons Arjuna gives. So, text 39 starts with 4th reason, that's the destruction of family dynasty. And what was the Arjuna logic? How did he see, if you see 39, 40, 41, right? It was a very logical flow. So can anybody tell me the flow, how it flows? Just don't read, just if you remember, like just how the flow was from 39, 40. How does it start, family?
He said the men will be destroyed, so only women population will increase, and there won't be... there won't be men to protect the women, so they will get they will fall into some the bad things, and there maybe it's unwanted progeny may be generated, and that is one reason. The other one reason is there won't be anybody left to do the pitrakarmas. And another one is the older people will not be there to take the tradition of the run the tradition of the family.
That's good. So
it's come to that before the he starts with how he feels compassionate for his first region when he's compassionate towards his own family members, and then from that he finds out how he'll be very unhappy after everybody is killed, and then he comes to how it will have a sinful reaction on him.
Yeah.
And that after with sinful reaction he comes to the point where he feels that the family tradition will be lost.
Yes.
So if this is how he gradually comes to this point.
Yeah.
That's what.
Yeah. So the fourth reason, he starts with destruction of the dynasty. So if all the, because everybody was there in the war, whether they were in Pandava side or Kaurava side, but everybody was assembled. So all the elder family, all the men especially, they will get killed. So then once the men are not in the family, then the religious tradition, whatever they used to perform, the family tradition. So what was the, what we discussed in, what is the Sanskrit name for the family tradition?
Kuladharma.
In this, right, 39, it says Kuladharma. And that's a family tradition. And what is family tradition? How do you, if you want to explain what you... Yeah. So we discussed that Kuladharma, it cannot be, like it's a misconception that how, you know, it came through our family, like the concocted way. But it should be based on the Varnashrama system. Varna, 4 Varnas and 4 Ashrama. So when we follow the rules and regulations, because each Ashrama has its own. For example, we discussed Brahmins, right? Brahmins are supposed to read scriptures and convey that to the other Ashramas. So that's their duty. So in this case, if there is nobody, then everything, no Varna, everything is mixed. So nobody is there to teach the religion. what to follow, what to, what not to follow. Then automatically, as you know, because the men are not following anything, whatever remaining there, they, if they don't follow, then the women also automatically, they say, you know, they are not doing, why should we do? So then it starts from there. That's what the 40 it says, unwanted population, right? And we also discuss how Shtat ceremony. No, Anand Prabhu, they are this class only, right? Not device. They are not going to device, right? They are Prabhu's class.
Let's come closer.
So we are doing text 40. First chapter. This can just follow here. So any of the points we discuss in text 39, you can just, anybody know? And Varnashrama system is meant for the gradual progress, right? Is anybody right? So if they cannot take into bhakti, as we discussed in 41, so the Varnashrama is meant for to gradually uplift the spirit soul, and finally they come to bhakti devotion. So that's why, so everybody follow. And the logic we went through, right? Like family tradition get destroyed, then the Elish Noshrat ceremony, all those things. So that's happening right now. Currently, if you see, because there is no Varnashrama system, that's why we have so many problems, because it's not, nobody is following Varnashrama system. And we also discussed about mainly Shtat ceremony, that's in the text 41, right? And it's very scientific, as we discussed through very detail, we went through that. And what about devotees? Whoever takes to, do everybody needs to perform the Shtat ceremony? It's not. So what?
If we are pure devotee, that is enough to.
Like our forefathers or our next generations will be also liberated.
So why is that? Why devotees doesn't have to perform Shtat ceremony?
Because watering the roots.
Yeah. So you should remember that. So you are directly going to your. It's a Vishnu, right? Like you are. Yes. We are praying for Krishna or Vishnu, who is the root. So you don't have to go to the branches and fruits. So that's the right analogy we can use. And when we are born, right, when a living entity comes into this material world, so we discuss how many debts. It's already come with
six debts.
Yeah. Right? You need to pay everybody. Who are those? What are the
debtors, agents, family members, forefathers, or general entities?
Yeah, it's important. So, can we pay all six of them? Is it possible to pay all of them in this one life?
We have to keep working and paying.
Yeah, so we cannot pay, like for example, demigods, sages, general living entities. You cannot cover. It's, you know, the range is too wide, or, you know, it's too much. So, that's why it's better and it's recommended that you take into devotional service. So, once you do devotional service, you don't have any obligations. You are not obliged to perform anything like Shtat ceremony or anything. And it's not whimsical. So everything is according to Shastra. So it's and Narada Muni is saying in Bhagavatam. It's in Bhagavatam. Text 41. That's what he is saying Bhagavatam. Anyone who takes shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligations, and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligation to the demigod sages. So it's according to Shastra. It's not, you know, whimsical this thing. So we. Okay. So today we'll start with text 42. Let's recite Sanskrit together.
दुष्ये तैकुलज्ञानं वर्णशंकरकारकै उत्साद्यन्ते श्रुतिधर्मा कुलधर्मश्च शाश्वताम् दोषे तै कुलज्ञानं वर्णशंकरकारकै उत्साद्यन्ते जातिधर्मा कुलधर्मश्च शाश्वताम्
By the evil deeds of those who destroy the family tradition and thus give rise to unwanted children, all kinds of community projects and family welfare activities are devastated. Community projects for the four orders of human society, combined with family welfare activities, as they are set forth by the institution of Sanatana Dharma or Varnashrama Dharma, are designed to enable the human beings to attain his ultimate salvation. Therefore, the breaking of the Sanatana Dharma tradition by irresponsible leaders of society brings about chaos in that society, and consequently people forget the aim of life, Vishnu. Such leaders are called blind, and persons who follow such leaders are sure to be led into chaos.
So again here Arjuna is talking about Jati Dharma. So Jati Dharma and Kula Dharma. Right, what is Jati Dharma? Jati Dharma is community projects and Kula Dharma is family traditions. So this Kula Dharma is also according to Varnashrama Dharma. We discussed last time, right? So what is the essence of Varnashrama Dharma? How does it help?
Step by step.
Yeah, so Varnashrama Dharma helps in gradual elevation to spiritual life. It gives a gradual process. So when that is destroyed, what will happen is basically everybody's growth is stopped. So actually, this is a very nice point. If you read like Prabhupada books, like purports very carefully, you will find actually he will redefine the meanings and definitions of all the English words which we would have known in a different way. Like this is the proper definition. Like for example, non-violence. It comes later, 13th chapter or something. There is a like list of qualities Krishna gives. Humility, these are all required for what is knowledge? That's Arjuna asks the question. Then Krishna gives a systematic list of qualities. So there, one of it is non-violence. So non-violence, what do we generally think about non-violence?
Non-cooperation movement kind of thing where you do not respond to violence.
Yeah, that's one way. Or
no
we
cruelty.
Don't commit violence also, right? We don't kill.
No cruelty.
No cruelty. Other. That's what we think, right? At a bodily level. Like,
right.
if I kill an ant or I kill, let's say, a goat or something, then I think, oh, I'm violent. Arjuna is thinking, if I kill my cousins and my grandfathers, then I'm violent. That's why he's saying I don't want to do. But Prabhupada defines non-violence as, rather violence as, any obstruction to somebody's spiritual progress is called violence. So this definition is at a spiritual level.
Violence.
So actually in that actually subsumes the material definition we had. Because if we kill a body of an ant or let's say goat, then we are actually obstructing their journey, because they are supposed to evolve from one body to other body and come finally to human life. And then continue spiritual progress. So if we stop it abruptly, then they are not progressing in their journey. So that way also, we are obstructing their spiritual progress. And if we talk about in human life, let's say, we talked about this, right? What is the best way to deal with our family members is to actually help them come Krishna conscious. But instead of doing that, we create obstruction. Let's say create things or like, you know, motivate or incline or motivate people towards away from Krishna, then we are actually being violent, because we are not addressing the real self-interest of that soul. So that's what here. So this breaking of Sanatana Dharma is actually causing a lot of violence, because it's obstructing everybody's journey towards spirituality. And who does Prabhupada talk about as responsible for this?
Leaders.
In the purport? Leaders. So ultimately, leaders are the ones who drive the whole community or a country, and if the leaders themselves follow principles which are against Vedic principles, then not only that they get reactions, but they also lead the whole whole nation into chaos. So actually it is said that a king bears 1/6 of the reactions of the citizens. So if somebody wants to become a politician or president, it doesn't come with as free. We are supposed to bear the reactions because of the because of the responsibility we have in guiding them. And similarly, like, you know, I don't know about parents, but let's say if you take up any spiritual mentorship or like guru, let's say guru, once after the initiation, whatever reactions the disciple does, he faces it. So it's a very serious responsibility, especially a person in a leading role. So this also is emphasized by Krishna in one verse in 3.21, where Krishna says how normal people follow the leaders. 3.21 is yadyat acharati sheshtas tatta devadharo jana sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. 3.21. So Krishna is saying whatever action a great man performs, common men follow, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. See that this is very obvious. Like any person in a responsible position, whatever he does, common men look up to them and they follow. So that's why, like when the kings were very qualified, the whole kingdom was flourishing. Some of the examples of those kings, can we talk about?
Ramarajya.
We talked about, Prabhupada talked about in the earlier word.
Harishchandra,
Janaka. Actually, in the verse 3.21, Krishna talks about Janaka. So, or earlier verse a little bit. So these, so they are actually called Rajarshis, Rajas plus Rishis. So they are saintly kings. Saintly kings means they are doing ruling their kingdom as a duty, but at the same time they simultaneously practice devotional service. Because they themselves follow so nicely, the automatically citizens follow them, and they also come to devotional service. So that's why it's very important for the leaders to be very responsible and religious and following the Sanatan Dharma. So that's why Prabhupada said one of the missions he has in establishing ISKCON, he said he wants to cultivate Brahmanas. Like all of us, he wants to change, convert us or make us qualified into Brahmanas so that we can lead the society. So when we go back to our workplace or you know, some responsible position in the society, then normal people will follow us. Like, okay, how they are able to, you know,
it's upstairs.
How they are able to, you know, manage the family, at the same time manage work, how they are able to, you know, give education to kids, what are their values. Now, especially grihasthas, it said it's a very great preaching opportunity for grihasthas. Because people here nowadays, very common, diverse, right? So common. People at small things, they fight with each other. So when they see like two people, they're living together for 30 years, they're surprised. How is it working? So as devotees and as grihasthas, such an example we need to set to the whole world to follow. And also another practical application for us, especially very near and dear, is being parent. So being a parent, we are actually leaders to our children. So whatever we do, they are going to follow. So even if we, you know, say so many things, no, they don't understand. They understand all those things, but they understand more by your example. So if you say so many things, but we don't do it, no, they are so smart to catch it. So all of you might have experienced that. So actually, children are our gurus in that sense, because they train us in being ourselves, being very strict and dutiful. So, these are some applications we can think about.
So, it's very practical, right? So, we got the point like violence. That means if you stop anybody on the spiritual path, that's also considered as a violence. It's not physically harming something, but even mentally or, you know. So, I have heard also in different place, even if you disturb others' mind, if somebody is doing something, you just take a, you know, pick a fight with them or you disturb their mind, that's also considered a violence on, you know, that platform. So you can get reactions for that, because you are disturbing somebody's mind, you can get a reaction for that. And this is a very practical for all of us, as she explained already. You know, as a parent or as a, you know, family member, we have big responsibility. If you apply this words right practically, that means every one of us, because we come across people at work, right, every time. It's not that we are we cannot be a quiet, you know, mind never be quiet. And also we are like a social beings, humans are social beings, right? So we come across friends, family, relatives, parents, kids. So we all have to follow strictly, and when we guide them towards spirituality, that means that's the final goal. We need to do that. So that means we are being non-violent. If you don't guide them, if you make them go away, that means in one sense we are also being violent. It may be different way, it may not be gross, like, you know, hitting somebody or anything, but the reaction is same. That's what it's, you get a reaction for that. So that's how it works.
You are right in one way, Prabhu, because if you go and say, you know, do this or do that, usually the response, and especially if you are younger, is that you don't need to tell me, I know what to do, because I am the youngest in the area.
So how do we do? Yeah, that's a very
just
practical.
Lead by example. So
yes.
That's why it's very
so that's
practical.
The practical. Yeah. That's what I wanted to tell next. Right. So the other thing is, so when you talk to your parents, of course they are very elder and they are your first guru. So what's the best way to preach them is, set a good practical example.
Yeah.
And I already did the experiment with my mom, that one. So I used to tell her, you know, take up this, you're getting old, you know, just at least listen to me, I'm, you know, telling something. But she never listened for 3-4 years. So many times, every time phone India, she never listened. One time I went, then I took her to Yatra, like, you know, we go to like Vrindavan Yatra or Mayapur Yatra, right? We go for Kartik time. So I just took her. And like that year, I stopped telling her, because I realized I was making a mistake. Like, you know, by just telling, forcing elders. I the only thing I did is I took her for Yatra. The only thing I did was I took care of her nicely. Whatever, you know, I never forced her, you know, let's go here. She's old, so I cannot go with all the crowd, right? All the places. So whatever she was convenient, whatever she can take, I just did that much. And what happened is, in Vrindavan, it was rainy season a little bit. So when going on rickshaw, I was on different rickshaw, she was on different rickshaw. So while going on rickshaw, there's a pothole. So the one wheel, it went inside. So the old rickshaw, it fell down on the road. So she was sitting on one side. So she gave her finger on the, that, you know, that rod or something. So one finger, the stone or something, it hit here. So it's, you know, it's swollen, swelling, lot of pain. Then immediately, you know, I had from friends who has gone from Seattle and he's settled in Vrindavan. So I took his help and, you know, I took her to hospital. The next day it was still, you know, they took x-ray and all, it was fine. They told just take tablet and she will be alright. Then next day I didn't go to Yatra. I stayed with her. I took care of her nicely, whatever she wanted, everything. Then next day, after that, everything went on. She joined the Yatra. Then she went back. We went back to Bangalore. Then she is very close to my sister, naturally, right? So then she told my sister, he is the one who is going to take care of me nicely than I have brother, elder brother and elder sister. He told he is the best person to take care of me. He took care of me so nicely. I think I have more, you know, trust or anything. When I grow, become really old, he will take care of me. So it's by example. So that's the only way we can deal with the parents. And of course, for kids, how do we deal with the kids? You cannot do the same thing. Means, of course, you have to set an example. But especially for boys, you need to be a little bit strict until 16 years. Until they get 16 years, you have to be strict with them. For girls, you have to be very affectionate. You should never scold them. You should never use any you know, like rough or rude word with them. Always affection. Then they get attached to the parents. But for boys, it's opposite. Until 16 years, you have to be a little bit strict. Otherwise, they will go, you know, crazy. They will go wherever they want to go. So that's how, of course, relatives or friends, everything, is just by example, personal example. And everything comes from the purity. So when we follow the process, when you have the purity, you don't even have to talk a single word. So in the spiritual life, there are, you know, there are three categories. They divide the people who follow in three categories. One is Uttamadhikari. They are on the highest platform. Then other one is Madhyamadhikari. Next one is Kanishadhikari. So we'll go through details more. It's in the book. But so Madhyamadhikaris, they are pure. So those person, like for example, Prabhupada, right? So you don't even have to, they don't even have to talk a single word. If you just look at them, you'll automatically get inspired that there is something in this person. I'm pretty sure you have come across people who have that purity. If you just see them, you want to follow them.
It's Uttamadhikari, right?
Uttamadhikari.
Okay.
So Madhyamadhikari and all, still they have some, you know, lacking this thing. But we'll go through detail. But that's what it is. So it all in our hand. So when we follow something nicely, you get that purity, then it's easy to give it to others. If we don't have anything, how can we give it to others? Right? It's not possible. So first we need to get.
So you have in devotional service Kanishadhikari, Madhyamadhikari, Uttamadhikari. So definitely we don't even qualify for the Kanishadhikari. So at this point, does this karma kanda applies to us completely? Because we have to follow until we go to that point. Or because I'm coming to this point, so I should basically neglect everything the karma kanda has prescribed for everyday duties.
It depends on the sincerity. If you are really taking shelter of Krishna, right? It's sincerity. Basically, it depends on sincerity. If you are really taking shelter of Krishna, then gradually you can give up.
It depends on how much you have faith also.
Faith, right?
It should not be like, you know, you are giving up but you are getting disturbed.
Yeah.
You know, many people have sentiments and
things
like that. Like, okay, I've been doing Ganesh Puja for 26 years. If I don't do it this year, something is going to happen. And if you, that keeps disturbing earlier night, you don't sleep. Then it's better, of course, you can like offer to Krishna and then offer to Ganesha. Like that's something you can dovetail.
Yeah, dovetail.
Knowing that ultimately, you know, Krishna is the supreme and if I just serve him, that's enough. But I have to grow to that point. So, yeah. So know the goal, know where we are and know what are the gradual steps to come there. Then we should be comfortably progressing.
Yeah, it's not a drastic step. You should never, you know, tell somebody, if somebody is following something, you should not tell, you know, blindly to them, like, you know, stop this, it's not good, you are not doing. You should never tell. Should not disturb. That's why the violence is also disturbing others' faith, others' mind. So you should never do that.
Actually, Krishna says in 3rd chapter about demigod worship, and he says, I give them the faith to worship the demigods. So if we see, let's say, our parents or somebody, right, worshipping maybe Kali or Ganesha or somebody, right, actually when we read that verse, we'll understand, Krishna himself says, I give them the faith to worship them. Because it's a gradual progress. At least they're worshipping somebody. No, with that, they get purified and something, and then eventually, they come to the right understanding. So if you stop them, then they will become worse, right? They will not even do that.
Yeah.
And completely sense gratification or, you know, like nonsense. So at least they are doing something. Once a week they are going to some temple. So yeah, another practical application I was thinking when Prabhu was telling about, you know, at workplace or so many places we are representing Krishna. So we often ask this question, right? How do I remember Krishna always? Like we try to, you know, okay, while chanting we are trying to hear, while reading, okay, we are trying to understand, or okay, sometimes we read. But rest of the whole day, how am I going to remember Krishna? What is, you know, what is the practical way I can remember Krishna? So one way is to meditate on how I am representing Krishna, or how I am, basically that's the point. So if I am at workplace, or if I am with family members or some other people, how am I representing Krishna in this certain, so many situations come across. At work, maybe you see politics, or you know, somebody is doing backbiting, or somebody, you know, is trying to, you know, take credit from you. So many things you will see. So in those situations, how are you going to be Krishna conscious? Like, how do I behave as a Krishna's devotee there, instead of how I used to be always? How does a Krishna's devotee behave in this situation? So if you try to remember like that, then we are actually indirectly remembering Krishna. And then maybe we'll get some clue and gradually evolve to the situation where in every situation we are trying our best to please Krishna.
open the wind a little bit, like there is some still chlorine smell inside. That's why I had opened that.
Okay, so then here Arjuna also says that it's the whole world is chaos, right? So
no,
that's what actually now. So that's what current situation is also, because the leaders are not following properly. The whole world is in chaos. Yeah, we can see, right? For example, Obama, he gave, you know, proper... he made abortion legal. See, imagine he's a leader, president of the country, and he's saying abortion is legal. How many sinful reactions citizens are going to come in because of that, and how much he's going to get reactions? It's horrible, actually. So, see, we can imagine if we are living in that country who's led by a person like that, how our situation will be. Okay, you don't think about that discussion of population control.
That's what I... Okay, yeah.
Is it legal? I don't think it's legal.
Yeah, yeah. The first law, the first thing when he, after presidency, he made it legalized, abortion. That's what I, Arivilas Prabhu told us. First thing he did was that one, only abortion.
Yeah, he signed so many such laws.
Yeah.
Recently he made sure that others will, government will, others will pay for it.
Yeah, yeah, that's what he's doing. Okay.
So, Varnashrama, when we follow, as we discuss, it's a gradual progress. And it makes, brings the people all the qualities, like mercy, forgiveness, right, all the good qualities. But when we break down, we see the other things of it. People become ruthless. And it's happening. If you see number of gun shooting, all those things, they don't even care, right? Where they're shooting, they don't even know. So that's, see, it's taken ages to bring, you know, all this, follow this samskaras, to have good samskaras. But just few, two, three generation, it will all, you can break down easily samskaras. It's very difficult to
bring it back.
Bring it back. So, but the effect is, you know, it's a...
O Krishna, maintainer of the people, I have heard by disciplinic succession that those whose family traditions are destroyed dwell always in hell.
Those who destroy family traditions dwell always in hell.
Purport, Arjuna bases his argument not on his own personal experience, but on what he has heard from the authorities. That is the way of receiving real knowledge. One cannot reach the real point of factual knowledge without being held by the right person who is already established in that knowledge. There is a system in Varnashrama institution by which before death one has to undergo the process of atonement for his sinful activities. One who is always engaged in sinful activities must utilize the process of atonement called Prayashchitta. Without doing so, one surely will be transferred to hellish planets to undergo miserable lives as a result of sinful activities.
So there are two major points here. What is the first striking point? Yeah, yes. So Arjuna is saying, I've heard from disciplic succession that those who destroy family traditions dwell in hell. So Arjuna is not making an opinion from what he thinks. Like, he is basing on, like, whatever he heard from authorities. Okay, not all, they have told me, I've heard this. So this is the fact. So Krishna, that's why we should not do this. So that is also right way to understand or receive knowledge through disciplic succession. So in this regard, actually Prabhupada, whenever, you know, somebody says, you know, talk something and then says, oh, you know, in my opinion, it's like this. In my opinion, it's like this. Harivilas Prabhu also says, in any class, if you say, maybe, but,
I think,
that means it's all, you know, maybe concoction. After that, you can forget whatever they say. So these are all like beginning words. You can imagine what's coming next.
So Prabhupada, right, she said when people used to come and say, in my opinion, he used to get very annoyed whenever they used to that word. He said, what's the value of your opinion? He used to tell them directly. And to just make it clear, he used to tell, there is no value for even my opinion. So only when you follow the opinion of the scriptures or Lord, whatever
opinion
is
valid.
The scripture, if you follow that and if you talk based on that, then that has value. So he used to tell, like, you know, what's, there's no value for your opinion or my opinion, like that directly. It should be from the scripture, and whenever we talk something, it should be somewhere in the scripture. So you should be able to quote and show people. It's not, you know, we are making up, but then it becomes very diluted, the whole message.
So Arjuna is also hearing from disciplic succession and he's making his point. So there are two verses in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna emphasizes this principle of learning in disciplic succession. So one is 4.2, where Krishna says about evam parampara praptam. He says that saintly kings, we can go to that verse. So evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu sakalenaha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. The supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. So Krishna said, this is how, you know, traditionally knowledge is received. But then when it's broken, science was lost. So later on he says, that's why I'm giving this knowledge to you, to continue that broken chain.
Why there is no value for our opinion? So if I tell something, some statement, if I make some statement.
This is a quiz from introduction.
Why there is no value?
What are the four defects?
Well, keeps changing,
illusioning,
cheating propensity.
So we got cheating propensity,
committing mistake,
limited senses,
being in senses,
limited senses, illusion,
being in illusion. So it's, anybody have you out of all these four? Anytime do you think you are out of these four defects? So it's inbuilt system with these four defects. So that's why whenever we do something, at least there will be some tinge of, you know, no, it's not complete, it's incomplete. 100% it won't be. That's why for our opinion there is no value.
So does that mean that when we do any work, right, in office or wherever, we use this word, I think it should be done like this word, so we should not use that word?
No, in that time we're not doing the discourse, right? I mean, it's practical.
Yeah.
You're doing practical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think you can explain
with
that, I think.
I use so many times. Here also I keep using it. Just, you know, it needs, as
so
I said, purity.
That way, if you see, Prabhuji, then if you try to form sentences, like try it as a thought experiment, without personal pronouns, you cannot form thoughts at all. We are
supposed to use we when we talk.
Yeah.
We're supposed to use we.
Talking about personal pronouns. Me, we, any personal pronoun.
No, even for personal we should use we. Because
Paramatma is there.
Yes,
yeah.
We should never use I. I means you have a lot of false ego.
Okay.
That's what it is. That's why if you hear any sannyasis or anybody talk, they never use I. Like all this time they say we. Means soul and spirit soul. Or super soul. So that's how that shows how fallen we are.
That's true.
Whenever I write email, first I put I, right? Then I realize, I should change at least one V. I should make V. No, I practically try to do, but it's inbuilt, as I said. You know, it takes a lot of practice.
But I mean, if you're saying V, it is our thought, but you are including yourself
also in that. Like Arjuna says, right? Arjuna says the
Arjuna
same thing, right?
Is, right?
Krishna, why are we committing this, you know, great flag? No, I'm your friend, together we are doing this.
Together,
same thing. So, but I tell him, if not super soul, at least include me. Like, you know, Bhagavad Gita class together we are doing, right? Instead of telling I did this, we tell, you know, me. I'm there next to you, helping you. Then at least, you know, some ego will get down. So.
A long way to go.
Yeah, and the next verse, where Krishna refers to the parampara, is 4.34, where Krishna tells about how to learn this knowledge. It's from a spiritual master. So this is a very, very significant verse. Tadvidhi pranipathena pariprashnena sevaya upadyakshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshina. So these are all the qualifications to understand the transcendental knowledge. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively and render service to him. Unto him, the self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So these are the three qualifications to for approaching, for learning this knowledge. One is approach a bona fide spiritual master. Second one, inquire from him submissively. Third one, render service to him and fully surrender to him. So these are the qualities by which the knowledge is received. A disciple has to cultivate these qualities, then knowledge can be received properly. So this is some points about how to receive the knowledge. And the second point here is in the purport, Prabhupada talks about different topic where he talks about prayaschitta. So prayaschitta is the process of atonement. So for any sinful activity we do, there is a certain Vedic, like in the Vedas, there is given, you do certain things, you atone. Like how in the Christians, every Sunday go to church and you say, confess, right? So that's one way of atonement. But then actually this process is incomplete in the sense that this atonement just maybe at the best removes the reactions, but it doesn't remove the sinful tendencies. See, let's say I made one mistake, you know, I went and stole something. Then I feel bad and do certain activity, you know, to atone that. But then because I've committed once, the tendency is there. So next time again I'm going to do a different situation. So that's why this is not complete actually, this prayaschitta. So we are just trying to give a complete picture of this. But the real atonement is actually devotional service. If you take up devotional service, it not only removes the sinful reactions, it also removes the sinful tendencies. So we call devotional service as akarma. So gradually it's not only, first of all, it stops generating karma. Second, it burns the previous karma and reactions. Third, it burns the sinful tendencies. So you will no longer feel like acting like that. You'll not get the urge to do like that. So that devotional service is so very powerful.
So what are the three reasons you said? No sinful reactions.
One is, first of all, it doesn't generate karma. Mm. Second one is it burns the previous karma and previous reactions. And the third one, it destroys the sinful tendencies. And beyond all this, it gives pure love for Krishna. These are all, you know, some way to make us proceed further in the journey. But ultimately, what devotional service gives is devotion is love for Krishna, by which we can go to spiritual world.
That's why it's called Krishna consciousness. It's a change of consciousness.
Third point is destroys the sinful inclinations or tendencies.
Once the previous reaction. So that's why it's called Krishna consciousness. It's not, you know, it changes the consciousness. That's why, you know, it's very important.
So the point here, however, is so let's say if not in devotional service, somebody has, if at all they have committed sinful activities, they are supposed to do prayaschitta at least to atone them. So that's at least, you know, that helps them from not going to hellish planets. So here, because Kauravas are going to abruptly die and they don't get time to do this prayaschitta, so they are going to go to hellish planets. So that's why we are all responsible for that. Arjuna is saying we don't want to do that.
Very nice.
So the Arjuna is being very compassionate here. He's telling, okay, they are going to abruptly die and they don't get time. They are very sinful, I understand. They are very cruel, no? He calls, what does he call Duryodhana? Evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra, right? Durbuddhe, he says Durbuddhe. So I know all this, they are all very sinful. The only way they can get some benefit is to do some atonement, and they don't get chance of that also because they are going to die abruptly. So they are going to go to hellish planets, and because of that, we are also going to go to hellish planets.
So there is two practical, So Arjuna is a, what ashrama he is in? is a Kshatriya, right? He's a king, right? And he said, I have heard Grihastha and the Kshatriya, right? By king, he is a king. And he's saying, I have heard by disciplic succession. That means the kings in the olden time, even they were Kshatriya, they used to do the administrative work. Also, they used to listen spiritual topics from the, like, you know, they used to have Raja Rishis, right, in their kingdom. So, they used to listen, but currently, nothing is there, right? We know that. Nobody listens. What is this? It doesn't even exist. We cannot even have a spiritual topic. I heard in US, you cannot have a religion subject or something like that.
So, the Constitution says that religion cannot mix, and you know, recently the Democratic National Convention, when they mentioned Jesus, they were booed. So.
See, so it's going, you know, wrong direction very fast. We are going in wrong direction very fast. Dead end. We are going into dead end.
So actually, let's talk about practically, right? Even for material knowledge, we have to learn from teachers.
Yeah.
Some examples like music, right? If we learn, we have guru. You know, we learn from them. Dance, we have dance guru. Like recently, so many kids got Arangetram. So in their invitation, like guru, disciples of, you know, such and such person. So the tradition is there. Even for material knowledge, we receive it from a particular person,
yeah.
And we, you know, convey guru dakshina somewhere to show our regard and things like that. So what to speak of spiritual knowledge? How can we think, you know, on our own, we go and study and do some research and figure out some things. So actually, I can relate one recent incident. So we used to have a friend, and like he is from very scientific background. Like, okay, he did PhD and from IIT. So too much technical, too much garbage, I think. But anyway, so so what happened? Somehow he came to Krishna consciousness. So since 3 years, he's sincerely chanting, you know, 16 rounds, his family is favorable, he has 2 kids, everybody is favorable, inclined, everything is very good. But now after 3 years, he came to a chant, and he had a background of being an atheist until that point. So he's very conditioned with that attitude. So now after 3 years, he came to a junction that, okay, can you scientifically prove to me that Krishna exists? I can understand where he's coming from. Like, I can relate to him. I'm not, you know, criticizing him in any way. But this is just to illustrate one point, that so even to learn, accept science, actually we are putting faith in somewhere. Like, even to accept G is equal to, and I forget now, 9.8, right?
9.8.
Yeah. Even to accept G is equal to 9.8. Right, we didn't really do the experiment ourselves. Even if we have lab exam, we do it, we know it's going to be the final result, so we make up to come to that, right? Because we accept that, that's the final thing. So there is faith in science also. We cannot say science means everything. It's like you do a test and there is a proof and I have seen it, so I can believe it. It's not like that. So science also, ultimately, the fulcrum is faith. So we are also saying Krishna consciousness, ultimately it's about faith. Faith that Krishna is supreme. You start from there and you know, slowly develop it, then Krishna will reveal. But when it comes to spiritual topics, we cannot accept that.
That statement I make very carefully, Mataji. So because you say that you did the experiment, you couldn't get the number. Okay, everybody cooked up lab in the physics lab, chemistry lab, that's okay. But the point is that if we want, we could run through the experiment and we could get the answer. We got something close. We didn't get 9.81, we got 9.79 or 9.85,
right,
or something.
Exactly.
But we got something.
Right.
And the second part is that it's repeatable, right?
Exactly.
So because I have one friend who's an ardent atheist, and we have these arguments. So I have to, if we make statements like that, they will catch us. So
what statements like what?
You say that science is faith.
What I'm saying is, at some point or the other, root cause, you have not seen all the experiments. At some point, you start with some axioms.
Correct.
Like, let's say 1 plus 1 is equal to 2.
Everywhere you make
assumptions. Start with some axioms which you cannot prove.
Yeah.
No, but that's basically the way you do it is not that, right? Basically, that's how you set this null hypothesis and the alternate hypothesis. That's how when you publish a paper or when you are writing something, you take a null hypothesis and say that here is my statement.
Exactly.
I am doing X number of cases to say whether it's proved or disproved. That's the whole point. That's how.
That's right. So ultimately, at some point, you come to a stage.
Yeah.
If you go, like, you know, remove all the layers, there will be something which you cannot really prove. There is something you take as an assumption. That's what I'm telling.
So, for example, you said 9 point, right? We cannot really prove 9.8, whatever the gravity.
That's okay. Don't bring. So,
no,
okay. Actually,
no, I'm just
but I got
because
a.
Because that number, we are going to use it in the equations.
Yeah.
Right. That's fine.
So, actually, but then something inspired me in the way you were saying about scientific thing, right? First, you were telling about science is repeatable, right?
Right.
And there is a procedure, right? Actually, that's a very, very wonderful point because Prabhupada calls Krishna consciousness as a scientific movement. Why? Because the same thing applies. Prabhupada tells very clearly, if somebody is sincere and follows the process of devotional service, it's a repeatable in the sense that they will become pure devotees. So anybody you take, what they have to do, what requirements they have to follow is given. Follow sincerely, you know, no meat eating, four regulative principles, and chant sincerely, follow devotional service, you will become a pure devotee. It's a repeatable experiment. So that's why.
It's difficult than science experiment. Though.
Yeah, exactly. Because you have to change yourself, which is very hard.
You can't cook up the numbers.
And also the other.
And also, it's not only that, it's like you can practically experience. You know, like we can, from like some years we have been practicing. Actually, I just looked at my calendar. It's been 8 years since I came to Krishna consciousness first. So I had just to remind myself where I've come from always. So I just put a reminder. So 8 years, something changed. Something happened, right? Something is working. And so at least we are still continuing. So that's the, you know, that's, and ultimately, and actually amazing thing about what he said is that I feel so happy about whatever I'm doing, right? But still I'm not able to remove this thought. I cannot, I'm not able to bridge this gap. Then I said, yeah, for those people, actually they have to address this. Otherwise they cannot go further. So then I had a very advanced Prabhupada disciple who is a scientist and who is also a Krishna conscious devotee. So I put in touch with him so that, you know, he can talk in those terms and help him out in this situation. So main point there was actually the conditioning is so strong. Now he has been conditioned to be an atheist for so long that conditioning will come back and it will actually obstruct us in devotional service. So if we have any conditioning about, you know, certain activity or certain, you know, habits, you know, those things eventually will block us. But of course, devotional service will help us to, you know, overcome them. Devotees will help us.
So the point is basically you are saying in material, like in normal our school, we believe in our teacher, what they are saying.
That's
the first thing.
Exactly.
So accordingly, how Arjuna had started, Devala Vyasa, Asita Devala Vyasa, Narada, that one, right? So they also have confirmed that you are the supreme personality of God.
Yes.
So accordingly, you also have to believe that and then you proceed.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a disciplic succession. So the scientist Prabhupada used to, you know, always have these arguments because a lot of scientists used to come to visit him. So, you know, they used to tell whole body is made up of chemicals. In one sense, it's true. Our body, right?
That's true.
So also they have made a research what all the chemicals. Body consists of chemicals, which chemicals is it. Then Prabhupada told, okay, let's get all those chemicals. I'm going to give it to you. You just make a body. You create a human being. They couldn't do. They cannot do. So you tell, so what's the difference between dead body and the living body?
Spirit soul. But can we see through any microscope or anything, spirit soul?
Spirit soul you cannot see. And you used to tell, can you see your mind? It's with experiment. You cannot see your mind. So that means you don't have mind. There is a lot of gap.
Yeah.
So it's just that, you know, how much we can go on. We can dwell into it. We can discuss. Anyway, Prabhupada
has already
done.
But ultimately, it's the bottom line is, you know, we are all seeking for happiness. And we know we are following something which is giving us happiness. So why to disturb our, you know, path or journey? Of course, some things we need to address. Like if there is, so much block in or doubts or, you know, because of our whatever it is, we have to address it. But ultimately, you know, am I happy? Am I doing the right thing? Is it going to give happiness to my family and family members? Yeah, to some extent. Okay, I believe I'm going to invest in it and see what's happening. What's going to happen.
So
I will share one funny, maybe at the end of the class. I will share one. Just remind me. Prabhupada's story. I will share one Prabhupada's story.
Okay, text number.
अहो पता महत् पापं कर्तुं व्यवस्थिता वयं यद्राज्य सुखलोभेन हन्तुं स्वजलम् उद्ययता अहो पता महत् पापं कर्तुं व्यवस्थिता वयं यद्राज्य सुखलोभेन हन्तुं स्वजलम् उद्ययता
How strange it is that we are preparing to commit greatly sinful acts, driven by the desire to enjoy royal happiness. We are intent on killing our own kinsmen.
So Arjuna uses V two times.
Driven by the selfish motives, one may be inclined to such sinful acts as the killing of one's own brother, father or mother. There are many such instances in the story. History of the world, but Arjuna, being a saintly devotee of the Lord, he is always conscious of moral principles and therefore takes care to avoid such activities.
Okay, so first one point Prabhupada is telling is like because of selfish motives, people commit sinful activities to the extent of, you know, killing one's own brother, father and mother. Can we relate some examples we heard from history? Prabhupada said there were many incidents in the history. We know some of them.
Mughal, lot of
Aurangzeb. Yeah, Aurangzeb and
very
Hitler.
Popular.
Right? Hitler? Hitler killed
brother,
yeah. And even most popular is Kamsa. Kamsa, he arrested his father, you know, everyone,
yeah.
And then he took charge of the kingdom.
No, Aurangzeb is very popular because he killed his brothers, cousins, and also he imprisoned his father.
Ashoka killed his brother, right? Bimbisara. Ashoka killed his brother.
I think. Yeah. But Aurangzeb is, you know, recent.
Yeah.
It's very popular. Everybody quotes him.
So why? It's all because of selfish motives. And practically, can we say some things which we would have done in our life, where we would have, you know, like our brothers or sisters, because of selfishness, sometimes we would have hurt them. Some things somebody want to share. What glories they have done.
So I am very quick to anger. So usually I use words that are very hurtful. I used it on everybody. And then after that I go and apologize to them very sincerely. But the problem is that once you put out the word, you can't take it back.
Mm.
And there is a saying in Tamil.
Yeah, word is mightier than sword.
Correct. It says that if you burn somebody, that thing will go away and it will heal. But once you hurt somebody with your words, you can never heal it, no matter how long it has taken. So it will still be there. And my mother always used to say, you know, it's like, you know, you invite someone and you put a royal feast there, you put kheer, you put this, you put that, and in the end you put some dog poop in there. You know, who's going to eat it? Be careful, but you know, this is just how I am. I'm slowly trying to change, but so far.
Okay. That's very nice, Prabhu. Thank you. Any more stories?
That's not you, I think. Very, I don't know. We all are like, okay, he's talking for us.
Yeah. So many mistakes we did. No, actually, the problem is that time we don't even know it's a mistake. Only later on we reflect and always our parents say, right, like, you know, now you're complaining about food. When you go to US, you cook on your own, then you'll realize what food you're eating. It's a common thing they will tell, right? So, lack of gratitude and so many things.
So in this verse also we can see what Arjuna's mistake is, right? It's revealing his fallacy. It's revealing that in this verse. Driven by the desire to enjoy royal happiness. So that is his. So he is thinking the war is meant for
his enjoyment.
His enjoyment. Because he is thinking once he gets the kingdom, he can be happy. But this war is arranged by
Krishna.
For whose enjoyment?
Krishna's enjoyment.
It's only for Krishna. He is the only one who enjoys. So here, so Arjuna doesn't have that knowledge still. He is thinking the war is fought for him. and he is going to get happiness. So that's why it's, you know, he's revealing his, this thing. So if you go to verse, which verse is that?
Which one?
4:8. Let's go to 4th chapter, 8th verse. Why, you know, Krishna comes, why he arranged the war, first of all? The reason for
Krishna's descent. Paritranaya sadhu naminash.
Vinashaya sajuskrutam,
dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge.
To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So this is the reason he arranged the war. And all the people in the old world, tree world, like the old world, they came there. So he can vanquish everybody. So that's the reason he arranged the war. It's not for Arjuna and it's not for his happiness. So
okay.
It's a short one.
And here the point is Arjuna, because he is a saintly devotee of the Lord, he is conscious of the moral principles and therefore he wants to avoid, he doesn't want to act like, you know, all these people, because of selfishness, they kill their, you know, family members and get the throne. He doesn't want to act like that because he wants to, he is conscious of moral principles. So Prabhupada in one, some purports, you know, he says, he puts Arjuna's consciousness is like material consciousness, you know, how we should be aware of and how relating with us. In some other aspect, he glorifies him as pure devotee, you know, as we'll see in the next verse, where he says that because of his soft-hearted nature, Arjuna is behaving like this and he is qualified to receive knowledge. So text number 45.
Yati mam apratikaram ashastram shastrapanaya dhrataraashtarane hanyustanme kshematram bhavet.
Yati mam apratikaram
ashastram shastrapanaya dhrataraashtarane hanyustanme kshematram bhavet.
Better for me if the sons of Dhritarashtra, weapons in hand, were to kill me unarmed and unresisting on the battlefield. It is a custom, according to Kshatriya fighting principles, that an unarmed and unwilling foe should not be attacked. Arjuna, however, decided that even if attacked by the enemy in such an awkward position, he would not fight. He did not consider how much the other party was bent upon fighting. All these symptoms are due to soft-heartedness resulting from his being a great devotee of the Lord.
So Arjuna is coming to the point where he is saying, okay, even if they kill me, let me not raise a weapon. But actually Prabhupada is telling, he didn't even know how much they are bent on fighting. Actually, if he really did this, he would have been killed. So they are like almost, you know, very much, initially Arjuna says, right, I want to see all these people who have come to fight with me. So they are very much ready to fight. And Prabhupada says all these symptoms are because of his being soft-hearted, because of great devotee of the Lord. So all devotees, we talked about it, right? All devotees are generally very soft-hearted. So we should be careful about offending them.
So here also there are two options, right? Krishna, Arjuna considered two options. One is, first he had option to kill all the family members, like Bhishma, everybody. But he ruled out. He cannot do. So he didn't want to do that. The second option was, he considered, was going to forest.
Begging.
But he cannot do that also because
his nature,
Kshatriya's nature doesn't work. So he is stuck in between, stuck now. He cannot do that. So now he is using the middle path. He is telling, I don't want to do anything. I just want to, you know, sit here. I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to kill. I just want to do.
Even if they want to kill, I am ready to kill.
Yeah.
So he is taking the middle path. You know?
Actually, yeah, that one point about, you know, violence, non-violence. So it's not about my opinion, your opinion, right? Krishna's opinion is the final opinion, right opinion. So when Krishna says you fight a war, if you don't fight, that is violence. When Krishna says don't do something and you do it, it's violence. So exactly, Arjuna is actually, that's why later on Krishna is going to, you know, give proper arguments to defeat all his reasoning. See, these five reasons are so moral, right? Like anybody who listens this, they will think, oh yeah, what Arjuna is doing is correct. We should do like this. But Krishna is going to defeat all these arguments, saying actually reverse. If you don't fight, you cause you know, destruction of family tradition, improper women will be spoiled, and the progeny, improper progeny. Exactly same sequence is going to happen if you don't fight. Okay, we'll go to the next verse.
Sanjaya uvacha eva muktvarjuna sankhye ratopastha upavisat visrujya sasharam chapam shoka samvijna manasa. Sanjaya uvacha eva muktvarjuna sankhye ratopastha upavisat visrujya sasharam chapam shoka samvijna manasa.
Sanjay said, Arjuna, having just spoken on the battlefield, cast aside his bow and arrows and sat down on the chariot, his mind overwhelmed with grief. Purport. While observing the situation of his enemy, Arjuna stood up on the chariot, but he was so afflicted with lamentation that he sat down again. Setting aside his bow and arrows, such a kind and soft-hearted person in devotional service of the Lord is fit to receive self-knowledge.
So thus
end the, you can read that, thus end.
Thus end the Bhakti Vedanta purports to the first chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of observing the
armies
on the battlefield of
Kurukshetra.
So Arjuna was a great warrior, but here he was defeated. By whom? Whom was he defeated by?
Compassion.
By
whom? Compassion is soft-heartedness.
So yeah, but he is acting on his own here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he is defeated by his mind. Right? This all is mind, grief, everything is generated by mind. So he is defeated by his own mind. So let's see 6th chapter, 6th verse. What it says, 6th chapter, 6th verse. For him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy.
Which verse did you say?
6.6. 262. So for us, mind is a friend or enemy? So we should not listen. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, every day when you get up, you should beat your mind with, you know, 1,000 broomsticks and some, he tells some numbers. Because our mind is, you should never listen to our mind unless, first initially we should train by listening to, you know, words of Bhagavad Gita or devotees. And gradually, once our mind gets trained, then it will actually help us in devotion service.
And here Arjuna is doing some extraordinary, he is taking some extraordinary step in this verse. Did anybody realize?
He left his bow.
Yeah, Gandhi Babu.
He is keeping his Gandhi Babu. And what promise he had made before? Like before the war, right, battle, they tried all kind of to compromise. But what happened? Like he made a vow at some point. That somebody tells, it's in Mahabharata.
If anybody tells me to put my bow down, I'm going to kill them.
Kill them.
Yeah.
Oh. He was so determined. He was so determined. Right? But here, defeated by mind, nobody else, enemy, he just put his Gandhi bow. And in this, there is a story where
Yudhishthira.
The Yudhishthira Maharaj, he gets, you know, when they are fighting, he was fighting with Karna. And Karna is, of course, a very superior fighter than, you know, Yudhishthira. So he got, you know, he gets hurt very badly. And Karna says, you're not even, fit to fight with me. So you go from here. So Yudhishthira goes back. Then Arjuna comes to, he finds out that Yudhishthira is, injured. So he comes to the camp. So the first question Yudhishthira asks Arjuna is, did you kill Karna? Then Arjuna says, no, I didn't kill him. I came to know that you are injured. So I just came to see you. Then Yudhishthira gets very angry. Seeing, you know, why you didn't kill, then you are no use. Like, you know, you are carrying Gandhi or bow. It's you are no use. You put that aside. Then Arjuna gets so angry. then he tried to, you know, it's about to go and kill Yudhishthira Maharaj. Because they always fight, right? You know, Yudhishthira Maharaj was very soft-hearted. And Bhima and Arjuna are all very, you know, hyper kind of thing. So then Krishna was there, present. Krishna says, no, no, cool down. For
Kshatriya,
insult is worse than death. Insulting them, it's... So then that time Arjuna starts insulting Yudhishthira. You know, he just says...
You put all this...
But of course then Arjuna, after that, you know, anger reduces. Then he realizes that he made a mistake. But of course they beg forgiveness and... That much, you know, Gandhi Babu is that much determined to fight. But here, he was defeated by just his mind.
So actually in the first chapter we covered only four reasons. The fifth one, indecision, is going to come in the second chapter. So where we'll just read the translation, because in the exam if we ask, so you can tell. No, we'll ask five reasons, that's for sure. No, five reasons, list the five reasons and briefly explain. Yeah, so if you look at... Yeah, you can read from... We'll read the translation from 4 onwards. So, verse number 4, Arjuna said, O killer of the enemies... Second chapter, verse number 4. O killer of enemies, O killer of Madhu, how can I counterattack with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. Nor do we know which is better. So here is the confusion now. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battlefield. Text number 7. Now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure due to miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered to me. You, please instruct me. So this is the point Arjuna surrenders, and from then actual Bhagavad Gita starts. Where Krishna gives instruction rather than being a friend. So these are the fifth reason is indecision. Arjuna is confused whether to kill or not kill. Which is better, he doesn't know. Briefly.
So I have one question. Arjuna is being addressed as soft-hearted person, but prior to also he is a great warrior. So prior to Mahabharata, he must have gone to so many different wars. But then his soft-heartedness never had overcome his decision or anything. But here it happens. So is it? But at the same time, he is not addressed as cowardly. For me, what I think, like a small amount of water won't scare me, but tsunami will scare me. Does the size or the scale of the people there scare him in one way? Or only he was compassionate towards his own kinsmen, not the other?
So there are two aspects. If you have to talk it in a negative way, that's what Prabhupada says. That way, it's because of his family attachment, he became overwhelmed with compassion. Others, in other words, they are not related to him. So it was easy for him to fight. So there is no problem. Right? So that's a negative side of Arjuna which Prabhupada brings about. Positive side of it is, ultimately in all these situations, he is soft-hearted anyway. So because of that soft-hearted nature, is he showing even more compassion towards all his friends and relatives.
It's a very similar example if you consider a doctor.
Yeah.
He has to do his own
child or something. They will not do.
They will not able to do.
Yeah.
Because their affection or their relation is...
That's a good point.
Otherwise they will do very...
Yeah.
Very focused.
Yes, correct.
Prabhu, you said you are going to say a story.
Yes. Okay. So, I don't know what... Yeah. So once one person, right, some like atheistic person, so he was debating with Prabhupada. You know, if there is no God, right, you are doing so many things. Mm-hmm. And at the end of your life, you come to know that there is no God. What will you do? Prabhupada said, we are not doing anything differently. We are eating, we are having
fun. Actually, we are having fun.
We are having fun. It's not that, you know, we are doing some things which...
we are miserable, struggling.
We are having nice prasadam, we
offer eating,
dancing, feasting, we are doing all those things. So even at the end of the life, after this all practice, right, if we come to know that there is no God, still we are okay, we didn't miss anything. But what do you do if you come to know that there is a God?
Whole life you wasted.
Whole life you wasted. And what will you do if you are... So, this is a scientist used to...
Yeah. This is called Pascal's wager. What you are saying, this phenomenon is called Pascal's
actually, wager. Actually, one the funny story I remember is like, actually this is Radhanath Maharaj's story. So, he went to Chicago to start college preaching and all. So, one of the person in the crowd, he stood up saying, you know, I am God. So then, like in front of big class, like suddenly he got up and started arguing with him. So then they tried so much to take him away or whatever, and still it didn't work out. So finally they said, okay, you're God, right? Okay, let's see. So then they were discussing, like, suddenly he said, okay, excuse me, I have to just, you know, for a few minutes I have to go use the restroom. Then Maharaj said, okay, all the disciples come and catch him. They don't let him go. He's God, let him control his senses. Then he waited for some time, after that he started screaming. Then they told, okay, you accept you're not God, then only allow you to go. Then he said, I'm not God. Anyway, so it's like, you know, we say we are God, but we can't control our senses and all these things. So